Hello, welcome to Lean Sex Leadership. My name is Martin Hickey, and I'm going to be your host. This is Lean Sex Leadership. You can find me at leansexleadership.com. It's not a great website right now. I'm still working on it. Hopefully, I'll have something soon. I discuss the ins and outs of quality engineering, management, program, project management, and how to apply it to your life. I'm certified Six Sigma Master Black Belt and a recovering project management professional. I have been in manufacturing in one role or another for the last 20 plus years. Now, in this episode, we're going to talk about scope control. Scope control. You don't hear a lot about this. Nobody really talks about it. But it's kind of the number one killer of projects, among other things. And large organizations have a real problem with this. The reason why they have a real problem with this is because it's all about pleasing people. Pleasing people. Not maintaining standards. See, that's kind of the key to it. So let's get into it. We're going to talk about establishing scope control. Creep, what it is. Kill it with fire. Kill it with fire. And then we'll talk about a nice little story. Okay? So, you got to establish your scope. When you're doing a project management deal, when you're doing your project charter, it's one of the first things you're doing. When you're researching the project, figuring out, am I going to do this? Can I do this? You're going to figure out the scope of the project. Okay, what the hell is scope? Very simple. Scope is the work that needs to get done. The actual work that's got to be done. Now, how do we establish this? First things first, if you're doing projects or if you're doing a lean project, project management project, whatever, you're using a charter. Any other time, you're using a contract. Same, kind of the same thing. The only difference is how binding the damn thing is. Now, one of the first tools you're going to use to establish your scope control in your charter or in your contract is something called a work breakdown structure. This is a very formal document, which is a brainstorming device. It's used like you get a group of people or even one person, whatever, to just throw all the thoughts out on how long it takes to do stuff and how much material it takes to do it with. And then you try to determine what order and what's going to trigger what as far as what actually needs to get done. So you break it down as far as what needs to get done, when it needs to get done, who needs to do it, who should be doing it. And you assign the resources accordingly, as long as you have a breakdown of what the actual work is. And that's the primary purpose of a work breakdown structure, or WBS. Now, you attach that to your charter, and then you start setting up your Gantt chart and all your other stuff, because all the timing is going to flow from this. Your financials are going to flow from this, too. Everything is going to flow from this. Now, we need to limit some things on this thing. We need to make sure that nobody can just suddenly start changing things all of a sudden. See, in history, great example of this is do a deep dive on Ford Willow Run B-24 bomber. And Edsel Ford was really having a tough time with it because they just didn't put in the change controls right away. I kind of talked a little bit about this in the last episode. And I've talked about it in other places about drawing control. That's kind of the biggest example of this is drawing control. Because a lot of this stuff is done in the planning stages. I mean, work breakdown structure. It's a planning document. So you need to establish your limitations. Who can do what? When can they do it? Who can do it? When they can do it? And how to adjust, make changes in your in your work overall. That's your biggest controls on that. And the most important thing, whenever you're setting one of these up, get it tied to money fast. The sooner you can tie this to money, the better off you'll be. Because if you can get this is where the rubber meets the road, where profits and losses are concerned. Because at this point, you've got an idea. Labor cost, material cost, and then time. All of these things are tied together with this document. They're seriously, this is kind of the bedrock document for that. So that's why your limitations and your change control is so dire important where things are concerned. Because if you've got to make a change, if something comes up, then you need to make sure you have a mechanism in place to say, no. We're not doing it like that. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. We need desperately to have a talk here about what we should or shouldn't do in this. So that's why your change controls are extremely important at this point. And make sure that they are clearly established in charter, contract, whatever document you've got running the whole thing. I can't stress this enough. If you've got something wrong, have it written. I'm a little one-man shop here with what I'm doing. I find when I write my stuff down, what my goals are, where I'm going to, I hold to them. If I don't write them down, they don't get done. Because I don't have anything holding me accountable. So that's the way that works. Let's get into item two real quick. This might be a shorter one today. Customer requirement creep. The customer needs this. The customer wants that. Change this. Change that. Again, excellent example. Ford Willow Run. Because what was going on with them is every time the United States Army Air Corps had a bug up their rear end about doing something a little different, they needed to change what went on that B-24, which means drawing had to be changed, which means the assembly line had to be stopped in order to build that. When Ford said, no, we're locking the drawing here. You want a different plane, different drawing. We'll go to that one. Because it was constantly changing requirements. Another thing that brings on creep, no change controls. Oh, yeah, just let that happen. Oh, yeah, we can do that. Oh, that's no problem. Yeah, customer will like that. Let's add that to it. Next thing you know, you've got additional work being done. You're behind by 2 weeks and wondering why, and the customer's mad as hell. Oh, but you're getting all this extra stuff. I needed it 2 weeks ago. Not doing me any good sitting in your shop when I need it doing work on my floor. See, it's kind of an important thing. You see, with change controls, you can sit there and say, if we do this, it's going to take this much more time to get it done, customer. Do you want that? And the customer says, yeah, we can do that because then they can justify everything. And guess what? You're charging more because it's got to be paid for. Oh, we'll eat the cost on that. Really? Really? Well, there are situations where that is kind of warranted. You kind of have to. However, in this case here, more often than not, no, get the customer to agree to pay for it. Make sure their resources are there. Then, of course, there's people-pleasing management. I've kind of talked about this already. This actually seems redundant, but when you got management going, we need to really make the customer happy. We really need to do this. We need to really do that. That's a problem. The reason why that's a problem, that's setting it up where the customer is going to have an expectation that these things are going to be done for him in or her in the future. They're going to expect these things again. Guess what? It's going to cost more. You're going to have to do more. That's just the way it is. So you want to control creep. Project creep, contract creep, whatever. This stuff here kills businesses. This kills organizations. This kills manufacturing. Even products and services, IT companies. You got your people working overtime. You're paying them overtime to fix problems. Well, not problems, but fix additional items that the customers are screaming for. Next thing you know, you're out of money because you spent all of it on overtime. Tell me where that's going to do you any good. So, overcompensating your customer, they're expecting more stuff, and then the next time you do it, you don't deliver. Guess what? They're not coming back to you. Oh, they gave us all this. I don't know why they're going out of business now. Yeah, things are... be very careful with that. Make sure everything's paid for. Make sure everything's paid for. Yes, that's simple. I mean, that's how you have to think of anything where scope is concerned. Make sure everything is paid for. Matter of fact, what you do is you put an accountant in charge of this stuff. I mean, a hardcore accountant who is the stereotypical accountant. And this is what they watch. Watch how fast the stuff stays put together. So, these are things to look out for. Item 3. Man, we're going real quick today, aren't we? My kill it with fire. When you see these things, kill it with fire. A run-on project. Part of your scope control, have an end date. Or at least have dates where you have gates that review where you're at and are you where you need to be. Are we still doing something that is no longer a project but a day-to-day deal? If it's a day-to-day deal, hey, operations, get over here. This is yours. Get it out of my project. I don't need it anymore. Because if it's not benefiting just you for the project, then and it's benefiting other people, I'm not paying for that anymore. Get that off my line item. Get that line item off my budget. Go. Because it's no longer a project. It's day-to-day activities. It needs to get off of my budget. Because at that point, if it's not benefiting just my project and it's benefiting the whole company, guess what? It needs to be a line item in operations, not a line item in my project. It doesn't need to be. It doesn't need its own block, its own WBS block. Not required. The next one, the project is over, but the customer wants this. But we've still got a little cash in here, but this is where, like, all that questionable, illegal stuff starts coming into. Like, they'll keep a project alive to hide stuff. Oh, God. Run into a company that does that, run away. Don't even get hired by them. Now, also, you see some of this because, well, the project manager or the leadership doesn't have anything else to jump into. They don't have any other projects on the burner getting ready to run. Oops. Yeah. You need to be constantly developing a new project. And you want to always be closing projects, too. Yeah, you can have projects that run years, not decades. If you got a project that's running more than 3 to 5 years and it's not building like a bridge or a building or a complex or something, if you're not talking about a major environmental project, a major building project, and you're going 3 to 5 years, no. At that point, you're doing at that point, you're operations, you're not project. It's that simple. Now, the next one, we start the project because why? Why'd they start the project? A justification for starting the project in the first frickin' place. That's kind of the most important thing. You know, make or buy, all that stuff. The reason why you go through those exercises is because why are we doing this? What is the reason for it? What's the business reason for it? Is this going to make us extra money? Is this going to bring us goodwill in the market? Is this going to open up some market share? Is this opening up a new product line? Is this going to give us an added service that our customers actually want? See, all of these things matter. You got to get into all those different reasons and make sure that they actually make sense. Because if you're going to spend money and you're not going to get money back, there must be something else that you're getting that's just as important and everybody's agreeing to it. Or this is how we make money. This is what we do. That's the no-brainer. But you get to those things where, well, we're going to start, we're going to lean out this process. Why? That's the first question. We're gonna start a Six Sigma project here. Why? What's the benefit? Seriously, what's the benefit? Well, go through the initial steps on planning and figure out, will this be a benefit? Because you don't want to start a project and then find out that you're gonna make a lot less money at the end of the project. You see, there are so many ways you can like do stuff to prevent problems, but will the money spent be worth it? That's kind of the point of all the analysis before and all the planning. You'd rather spend a couple $100 in planning and surveys then get 10, 18 grand into it and then find out you're not going to make any money back. You've actually spent more money than you're going to save. Excellent example. I was working for one place that was making ammunition for the Mark 19, which is a grenade launcher. It's a machine gun grenade launcher. Go to the fat electrician, and look at what he says about the Mark 19. You'll actually see. I actually corrected him because he misnamed one of the pieces of ammunition in it. If you look in the comment section. Actually. Okay. No, I'm not that bad. It's just that I know that part of the industry so well. I've been out of it for a long time, but oh, I still know it so well. But what happened was, is we were having a problem with a part on it. And it was, we had to send it out and get it anodized because it's an aluminum part. And it screws on to the rest of the round. It's called an ogive. It's basically what people would call the warhead. It's just a aluminum dome that goes over the top of it. And we take aluminum bar stock and basically carve out the ogive because it had to be bar stock because there was a part of it that actually comes down with that when it impacts into a fuse to set off the grenade. So you need a solid piece there. So it had to be carved out using CNC machines. And the very base of it had to be cut out with threads, because it would be threaded onto the rest of the body of the ammunition. So what would happen is, when it was sent over to the other facility, which was about, I'm going to say it was like 60 miles away. Yeah, it was 60 miles away. Come off of our machine and then go to another entity that was, the company was family owned. He had the one guy in charge of the portion I was in, and then his brother was in charge of the anodizing facility, and then he also had another facility that made the training rounds. We were making the combat rounds, and the parts for the training rounds, he would do assembly of the training rounds. And then we had to send all of that to another supplier to do final assembly into the casings that had the propellant in it. So we did, and then our warhead stuff, we had parts, we'd send it to the subcontractor to do the rest of it, because it was a government, you had to go to, these guys were government required contractor to do the final assembly. A lot of issues going on there, just so much going on with that. So what would happen is, with these particular parts, the threads would get damaged in the process. So we were looking at ways to do this to prevent damage to the threads. And one item that came up was, well, how about we get some extra when it went through the anodized process, it was put on these titanium basically, you put them on these titanium items, and they would dip them in the anodized, dip in the acid, dip in the anodized, and then come out, and they'd be ready to go. So if we could limit the amount of times, because when they come off the CNC machine, we put them in a box, then they take them out of the box, and then put them on the thing, and then put them through the anodized, and then take them out and put them in more boxes. So there's a lot of handling going on there. Well, the problem is, these titanium deals are like 15 grand a piece. And we would have needed like 30 of these things. Not going to happen. The cost was not worth it. The juice was not worth the squeeze. That project ended fast. So we couldn't do it that way. We looked at other ways of dealing with it, but, you know, the amount of failures was considered acceptable once we did all the pricing out of potential mitigations. It really wasn't that much. The government did have issues with it, but it was more the assembler having any real issues than really the government. But they would complain to the government that everything, they weren't coming. Well, At least they weren't dealing with the issues we were dealing with one of our subcontractors. We subcontracted one round completely to another contractor. And they were having an issue because how this particular round was put together, you take a 38 caliber pistol cartridge and put it in there, and that was coming from Smith & Wesson. Oh, I have a hard time with Smith & Wesson ammunition ever since then. Oh, I have a hard time with it. Because there was a issue with that. I might talk about that some other time. It was the critical characters control plan issue. It's all... I don't want to get into it. But yeah, that's the black. That's one of the Black Belt projects that couldn't, because it was dead at the beginning. And it was dead at the beginning because the one way to fix it would have cost too much. Well, be more careful. That doesn't work. Because there are many reasons for those things. Because we're talking about threads. They're not very big, and it's aluminum, which is not very hard in the grand scheme of things. Bump around inside them boxes while transport. Guess what? You get dings and bends in the thing. You know, I mean, there's ways of fixing it on site and things like that, but they don't want to because they're trying to go fast and some of it's automated. So, you know, you're trying to make thousands in an hour. I mean, it's we're not talking about, you know, these things are not being made slowly. We're trying to make lots of these because at the time, we're talking about the early 2000s, all the way through about 2010, I think. I have to remember when I left there. But, well, actually, I was laid off. There were issues. And we were doing okay, but there were issues. But also, things were winding down. Surge was about done, all that kind of stuff. And Obama just got elected, and it's a whole different thing. Now, you see, there were, you know, there were issues with that. Well, that was quick. Now we discuss that topic. Let me know some items you might want to hear about through my websites, lean6leadership.com. Like, share, subscribe, whatever platform you're on. 5 stars, please. Reviews, write them out. I do check for those things on all the platforms as best I can. I do have access to Spotify and Apple Podcasts because I do look in there. I do have something up on YouTube. Not much right now. I'm currently filming some others. I'm still working through that. I'm working through a lot of technical issues on that. plus, I'm trying to get my own thing going here with my own little business going, which is another reason for the videos because I need to get something on my Etsy site too because I do have Etsy site going. So like I said, like, share, subscribe, and so you can get updates. I know I haven't been updating frequently, but I'm changing that now. I'm getting more of this because I had issues. I had quadruple bypass. My kidney stopped working, so I had to get medically stable before I could really kick back into this full time, which I'm getting back into. It's taking longer than I want, but things are definitely working to my favor now. So, like I said, like, share, subscribe, follow, whatever it takes. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter, Facebook. I've got the Lean Six Leadership on Facebook. I should be posting more stuff there soon. So, please, feedback, need it. I'm starting to, you know, I'm not going to run out of ideas here, but I'd rather hear what you guys want to hear, need to hear, and I can better get stuff back to you. Not that I need to, because I'll still put some stuff together and send it out, but if I have some ideas what you're looking for, it'll be a whole lot better. Thank you very much. Bye.